Okay, so the din of Maisa Shabbos that we started to talk about last week gives us a little bit of a entree into some methodological questions, because it is relevant to a broader discussion of how to understand the Issur Melacha on Shabbos, and that itself provokes some methodological discussions. So I had started to give you a little bit of background that there was a Machlokas Achronim. There is a Machlokas Achronim concerning how to relate to the Issur Melacha on Shabbos. That there were a number of Achronim who posited and were associated with Chassam Sofer, because he was perhaps the most well-known, that the Issur Melacha on Shabbos is specifically addressed to the individual. That the individual should be in a state of menucha. He should not be disturbing his menucha by doing melacha. But melacha on Shabbos is not inherently bad. And that is reflected in the fact that by Torah law, one is permitted to ask a non-Jew to do melacha for him on Shabbos. And if melacha was really bad, we would say, even if that's technically okay, it seems pretty wrong. And it would seem like saying that, all right, I'm not going to murder someone, but I'll hire someone to murder. To whatever extent that keeps my hands clean or not, it's clearly morally wrong, and that should be severely problematic. So why should it be that it sounds like by Torah law there's nothing wrong with asking a non-Jew to do melacha for me? So that's why these Achronim formulated this idea that apparently the goal of the Torah is not to stop melacha from happening on Shabbos. It's to stop a Jew from disturbing his menucha. If a Jew is in a state of menucha, so then he is doing what he needs to vis-a-vis Shabbos, and there's no need to avoid causing melachas. How you doing?
Do you want to refrain from calling this a God or a chesed?
I do, because if you follow the discussions in the later Svarim, there were some who explicitly argued that you shouldn't call it Gavra and Chafsa, and that it's coming on to different kinds of concepts. But clearly, when you get into the back and forth of some of these debates, and if you want to keep all the Achronim on the same page, in the same language, it's going to be difficult. But for example, I believe, if I remember correctly, Devar Yoshua, whose words I will refer back to in a few minutes, Devar Yoshua, in his language, he says, this is not about calling it Nisr Chefzer or Nisr Gavra, but this is simply about how the Isser is defined. And they make reference to the Pasuk in the Asaras HaDibros. In the Asaras HaDibros, here I have it open now, this is in Dvarim Hei Yudalid. So the language of the Pasuk is, V'yom HaShvi Shabbos LaShem Aloch Kecha, Lo sasa chomalacha atu vin chavitacha v'yavdacha v'yamasacha v'sharacha v'chamoracha v'chol v'hemtacha v'gercha shir v'sharacha l'man yanuach avdacha v'yamasacha kamocha. So it's an interesting diuk. It's specifically on that last phrase that your eved and your ama, they l'man yanuach, they should be in a state of menucha kamocha, like you. You should be in a state of menucha. So the way they understand it is that that's the goal. The goal is that you should be in a state of menucha. It's simply not about malachos, it's about you not doing malachos. And so the Zvar Yeshua, for example, asserts that this is different than Gavra and Chefza. Now, just to add to that, we mentioned, I think I asked you to look at some point, the essay in the Asfan Daraisa that Rav Yosef Engel has. You recall when we talked about Behemten Shel Tzadik, and we made reference to this piece, that he takes issue with the Achronim who maintain that temporary Isurim cannot be Isurei Chafzo. Recall that? So when he discusses that piece, he also criticizes this approach that we're mentioning there, and he does phrase it that way in terms of Gavra and Chafzo. So it's hard to control the language of all the different Achronim who talk about it. That's why we're being a little bit more cautious in how exactly to express it. So there are those who specifically say this is different from the general Chafetz Gavra discussions, and there are those who, at least when opposing it, they do use language of Chafetz Gavra. Now, Rav Yosef Engel, once we're mentioning it, Rav Yosef Engel in that piece, so he addresses a question that the Magid Mishnah asks, that when the Mishnah in Shabbos lists off the Malachos, it's different than the way the Rambam lists it. The Rambam lists the Malachos in terms of verbs, in terms of actions. The Malachos are Charisha, Zriya, Ketzira, things like that. But the language of the Mishnah in Shabbos and the Defayin Gimel is Hazoreya, HaChoresh, HaKotzer, etc. So why does the Mishnah use that kind of language? And why does the Rambam use different language? So there are some who explain the Rambam as opposed to the Mishnah, but Rav Yosef Engel, in this essay, he focuses just on the Mishnah. He says, why does the Mishnah phrase it that way? So he says, well, if you like that approach of the Achronim, you could explain it. Because the Mishnah is not going to say that problems on Shabbos are Zriya, Charisha, Ketzira, because they're not. The problem is, HaChoresh, HaKotzer, HaZareya, a person who is going to be doing these things, that's where you have an issue. But Zriya, Ketzira, these are neutral actions. And his kind of devil's advocate phrasing of it, he's there formulating a position he doesn't agree with. But he's saying that that's based on the assumption that if you're going to say that Ketzira is bad, how could it be that 6 days a week Ketzira is fine? And Charisha and Bishul are fine. And then all of a sudden, one day a week, it takes on some negative character. So it must be that, no, it's not about that, but rather it's an isser on the individual to do malacha on those days, on Shabbos and Yantif, etc. So Rav Yosef Engel, in opposing it, uses the language Chafetz Gavra. Others felt it was separate from that whole kinds of discussion. Okay, is that addressed a little bit?
Yeah.
All right, so in any event, so many Achronim took this approach of the Chasam Sofer. So the methodological question that we brought up last week is, if you're trying to understand what a din is really about, what do you look at in order to be most reflective? And what happens if you have a din min haTorah and Chazal changed it? Chazal modified it. So do we look at the din min haTorah and say that's what teaches us what the din is really about? And Chazal's different approach is because of some technicality? Or do you say the opposite, that Chazal made their extra rule because they perceived that that's really a part of what the concept is getting at, and that's why they made a prohibition to more accurately match the concept? So why was it permitted min haTorah? Maybe that's a technicality. But Chazal perceived that the reality required more in order to actualize the Torah's concept, and that's why they made it in the first place. So here, this question of, let's say, why are you allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos? So is that the most relevant detail to look at? Or should we say, no, Lamaisa, you're not allowed to. And the rabbis prohibited because they perceive that that's a contradiction to the spirit of Shabbos. So in other words, is it like murder? When it comes to murder, so we know that you're not supposed to kill. And if you hire someone to kill, you're also doing the same thing, essentially. So when it comes to Shabbos, you're not supposed to do malacha. What if you have someone else do malacha for you? So according to the Chasam Sofer and those in his camp, on a Torah level, that's nothing. The Isser is not about malachas happening. The Isser is about you doing the malacha. And why did the rabbis prohibit it? Okay, they prohibit it because of technicalities, that maybe you will come to do the malacha yourself. If you end up having other people do it, you'll forget that there's a difference between other people doing it and you doing it. Or maybe the very talking about it is a problem, various other issues. But those are technical reasons to prohibit it. But the concept is reflected in the Torah law that doesn't have an objection. Okay, so far so good. While others, such as Rav Zevin, said, no, the opposite is true. That the rabbis prohibited it because they perceived that there is something wrong, that it is comparable to hiring somebody to murder someone, comparable in that sense. That's why they prohibited it. So why does the Torah allow it? Okay, that's a technicality, because maybe it's a concept of something akin to shlichus, and technically speaking, shlichus doesn't actually apply with a non-Jew in this case. So therefore, it's not going to actually fit into the Torah's technical prohibition, but it's clearly against the spirit of the Torah prohibition, and that's why Chazal came and prohibited it. So two opposite approaches. What do you look at? You look at the way the Torah is and consider the Din D'Rabbanan to be a technicality, or do you assume the Din D'Rabbanan reflects the concept and the lack of that Din on a Torah level is a technicality? Make sense? Everyone follow? Yes, sir.
For Rav Zevin, I'm just saying the Ikar the Din to be determined properly by the Rabbanan. And that's Masoviv on the Rabbanan understanding the Isa correctly.
Right. So, which is how we assume in general. Right. You know, this gets into much broader discussions of how we relate to Dinim Durabanan. But just to address that for a second. So, for example, it's a big question in general why we are obligated to follow Dinim Durabanan. So according to the Rambam, it's because of Pasuk and Parshas Shoftim. I think we spoke about this a little bit this year. The Pasuk that says, Lo sasim and adavar she'agidul chayom and asmal, that you're not supposed to deviate from the instructions of the Bez Din HaGadol, not in any direction. But the Ramban and others maintain that that's only referencing if somebody goes with a question to the Bez Din HaGadol, so then you have to follow the answer. It's interpreting existing Torah law like the Supreme Court. But to legislate new things, different branch of government, to legislate new laws, so we don't see from that pasuk that they have the right to do that. So where do you know it from? So there's a lot to discuss. According to the Ramban, how do you know it? So the way Rabbi Chanan Wasserman explains, and this is also with Rav Schechter's particular formulation, is that Chazal understood that this is also a part of the Ratzon HaTorah, that whatever they imposed, either it's coming because of the need to make a Siag LaTorah, which is also a part of the Ratzon HaTorah as expressed in various contexts, or it's because they're filling in the blanks. And as Rav Schechter puts it, you know, those who know the lines very well know how to read in between the lines. So Chazal, because of their mastery of the Torah, so they're able to perceive that even that which is not spelled out is also part of the Ratzon HaTorah. So Mishum Avos Hashem, you're going to want to do that which is also the Ratzon HaTorah, even if it's not presented as a tzivui. So, and that's the case. So yeah, so then what we'd be saying here is that Chazal could perceive that there's something wrong with causing melachos on Shabbos, even if it doesn't technically violate the words of the Chumash. And that's why they came and prohibited it. So the concept is, yes, we don't want melachos happening. So that was one battleground of this issue. Hi.
So if we see Rav Zevin as understanding that, is there room to say that that's not necessarily across the board?
That what's not necessarily across the board?
Meaning, that perhaps in some DNA, in some DNA Darabanan, it's best to evaluate Darabanan in order to... Perhaps sometimes when you want to find out what the concept of the din is, it's best to look at the Darabanan, but that wouldn't necessarily be true in every case.
Right. So I think for sure there's got to be true that that each case has its own unique parameters, and there probably isn't one answer to everything. So that's a much more logical approach. But just asking the question in the first place helps us to appreciate that in each case, that's the question we need to figure out. So when we want to know what a din really is about, and you have a difference between the Daraisa din and the Darabanan din, so we have to figure out which one to look at, and you're right that the answer might be different in each place. But battleground number two on this question was our Gemara. Because our Gemara, and Tezvav Mar Aleph from the Chulin, so the Gemara talks about a prohibition to be nene from the Malachos of Shabbos. And this prohibition, you have to assume, is a rabbinic prohibition for a couple of reasons. First of all, we see just the whole logic. It's phrased as a knas, and therefore it has elements which would not be so compatible with Torah law, such as distinguishing between the one who did it and others, distinguishing between shogeg and mezid, distinguishing between waiting and immediately. So all these details are all compatible with seeing it as the knas. And that's the likely structure. But on top of that, there's also the fact that if you go exactly 100 blot later, to Daf Kuf Tesvav, in the same Masechta, so there the Gemara tells us there's an explicit drasha that understands that there is no prohibition in HaTorah of Maisa Shabbos. That's what it sounds like. That there, the Gemara tells us that even though we have a rule of Kol Sheti Avdi Lecha Harehu B'Bal Toichel, that anything that is made disgusting by the Torah tells us not to do it, so that is subject to an ister of Achila also. This, by the way, is in Kalabasa that we were talking about before, about learning Kalabasa next month. So this is, we'll save some time from next month, seeing this is, so you know, that this is a drasha in that parak in relation to Basa B'Chalav. When it comes to Basa B'Chalav, so there is a prohibition to create it, and there's a prohibition to eat that creation. And when it comes to Maisa Shabbos, apparently it's not the same kind of thing. And that's the Gemara's question. El Me'ata, top of Kuf Tesvav and Aleph, Maisa Shabbos is Saru, so then Maisa Shabbos should also be prohibited. The Hatzi Avdi L'cha, because that is something that the Torah has made disgusting. The Torah has told us is wrong to do. So no, Amar Kra ki Kodesh Yilochem. The Pasuk says that Shabbos is Kodesh. He Kodesh, the Ein Maaseh Kodesh. That is to exclude the results. Okay, so what do you do with that? And they give it just for your... just for your knowledge here, you see that the Tosfos asked to look at. Tosfos has a little bit of a question how to understand this drasha. So Kuf Tesvav Min Aleph, V'yom Tomar V'Emel L'Mishri B'Hanah Aval B'Achila Asiri. So maybe we should say that pasuk just comes to tell us that there is some Hanah permissibility, but eating it is actually prohibited. Kedaparach B'Samach Gav Yisroim V'Yishlomar Deheter Hanah Nafkela Mivlachem Kedamar Beruba V'Elanayris. So from other Gemaras, V'Filer B'Yochan Asamler Da'osu B'Vashal B'Shabbos. Because table or biyochanan lamali meibar mikta bikodesh the maaseh shabbos is siri typically mikol shtiavdo. Okay, fine. So the questions one could ask about the nature of the drasha. So this Tosfos calls our attention to it, and that's a part of what we're going to have to come back to in a few minutes. Okay, so what we find here is that there's a prohibition to be benefiting from maaseh shabbos, but that's a prohibition midrabanan with various parameters. And there is a drasha 100 blot later telling us that min haTorah is permitted. So this revives the same question, but actually adds another layer to it. Because here you could ask also, if I want to understand what's most reflective about the Isser on Shabbos, should I look to the Din min haTorah or the Din midrabanan? Because it seems like we again have an opposite deal here. Min haTorah, you're allowed to benefit from Maaseh Shabbos, and midrabanan, you're not. How would it reflect one way or another? So the assumption is, you can maybe argue on this assumption, but the assumption is that if you want to say that Melacha on Shabbos is objectively bad, so then it would seem that would lead to inherently treif results. That if Shabbos, the Malacha, is by its very nature wrong, so then benefiting from it should flow automatically from that. But if it's an isser on the individual to disturb his rest, he's doing something wrong by engaging in malachos. So then that shouldn't necessarily stain or contaminate the product. So yes, he should not have disturbed his menucha by being mevashel, but it wouldn't necessarily mean that the product of that bishul is awesome. So step one is, if you accept that premise, that there's such a relationship, which you might argue on, but let's say you accept that premise, that one flows from the other, so then these two possibilities, the din min ha-Torah, that it's mutter, and the din mitrabanan, that it's aser, could give us two different ways of looking at what is the correct understanding of the relationship with the Yisr Shabbos to Malach. So far, so good? Okay, but it gets more complicated. Because this is more complicated than the Amir al-Aqam part, because you can add in another level. It's not just that you have a Torah law and a rabbinic prohibition. There's actually three stages, because it's a drasha from a pasuk. So sometimes...
talking about the Gemara
and Kuf. Yeah, and Kuf Tesvav, yeah. So it's a drasha from a pasuk. So sometimes, if you have a drasha from a pasuk, you might get the impression that the drasha is a chiddush. And without the pasuk, you would have thought the opposite. So maybe that gives us another candidate here, how to understand the din. Maybe there's three levels. There's what I would have thought without the drasha. There is the drasha which flips it. And then there's the din d'rabbanan which flips it yet again. Which of those three candidates is most worthy to look at as reflective of the din? Right.
What you would have thought
without
the drasha.
Right. First is what you would have thought without the drasha, which is what? That Maisa Shabbos apparently is usur.
Right.
And therefore maybe that malacha is bad. Then there is the drasha, which tells us that Maisa Shabbos is mutter. So I guess that would mean that malacha is okay, and just the individual is not allowed to do it. And then there's the din d'rabbanan, which it goes back to being usur, and therefore maybe that tells us that malacha is bad. So three different candidates. What should we look at?
Can you repeat the third one?
The third one is the din d'rabbanan, where we find that Maisa Shabbos is usur. Now, I can make it even more complicated, as you will, because it's probably relevant that it's not absolute. Maisa Shabbos, the Yisr Rabbanan. There's all kinds of distinctions. So that's also probably going to complicate things. But we're not up to that. So here we got three stages. What you would have thought without the drasha, what you would have thought with the drasha, and what the Din Rabbanan gives us, which is somewhat complex. Now, personally, and I'll emphasize this because it has a very big Mechaber arguing the other way. It's just to acknowledge other possibilities. So I would have thought really the drasha is where we should look more than what it would have been without the drasha. Because the drasha is what's conveying to us Torah law. So even if you wouldn't have known it without the drasha, I would have thought that just would have meant we weren't understanding it completely. And that the drasha is what's teaching us what the din really is. So if I would have thought that Maisa Shabbos should be usur until the drasha comes around, I wouldn't have thought that that tells us so much about what Maisa Shabbos is. It tells us what we could have thought it was until the drasha, which is the intent of the Torah, is telling us differently. So I would have voted against stage one, personally. Probably stage two, maybe stage three, but I wouldn't have put much emphasis on stage one. However, I am way outvoted by the Shaul HaMeshuv. The Shaul HaMeshuv, so Yosef Shaul Nathanson, who was a Gaon Olam, who wrote a gazillion Shuvas, So in one of the Kazillion Tshuvas, the Shaul HaMeshuv writes that you should pay attention to stage one. That's what's reflective most. That the drasha is a chiddush against what you would have thought. So therefore, it must be that really the essence of the Isser of the Malacha on Shabbos is that Malacha is bad.
But how does that, that's counterintuitive. I feel like it's self-contradictory because if the drasha is a chiddush against what I would have assumed that the pasuk is telling me, then by definition the pasuk isn't indicative of what the concept is.
Well, that's what he's saying.
Right.
What you just said is what he says.
But that doesn't seem so different from what Rebbe's saying. Rebbe's saying that.
I would have thought that the
it's a raw. It's something that's raw that I need to interpret.
So I would have thought that the drasha does tell us what the pasuk is really getting at. Shaul HaMeshuv is saying that no, is saying that since the drasha is a chiddush, so therefore it means subtract the drasha, and that's what the real essence of the din is about. And the drasha reflects a quirk.
But with what the Shaul HaMeshuv is saying, if we take away the drasha, and we look at the pasuk, I'm not being told anything because I need the drasha to tell me what.
Rabbi, it means that that's what you would have thought, that you wouldn't have needed any pasuk for that. So therefore the instinct would be that Maaseh Shabbos is awesome. So basically what he's saying is, why would you think that? Why would anyone think, if the Isser Malacha on Shabbos is just to be at rest, but there's nothing wrong with Malacha by itself, so why would anyone think that the effect of cooking on Shabbos should be prohibited? The only reason you would think that is if there's something inherently wrong with cooking on Shabbos. So Malacha itself is bad. So says the Shaul HaMeshuv, this, he thinks, is a slam-dunk proof against the Yisod of the Chasam Sofer and others. He says, that shows you that it's clearly wrong. Gilad, you have a question?
Is there, relevance with Nolad? With Dean Rice and Malacha?
So it's a good question. What exactly is the nature of the Isra of Nolad? Is related but not related enough, because Nolad is its own issue like a malacha. We're not 100% sure exactly what the issue of Nolad is, but Nolad is not premised on there also being a malacha separate from itself.
So I think there's a distinction between Otsah and other malachas when it comes to if you carry from a serious harvest, you can then get benefit from
the malacha. Right, we spoke about that on Thursday, on Wednesday a little bit. There is, the Mishnah Berurah quotes such a distinction, that you don't actually create anything in the object, so that should make a difference. But here, Nolad is more focused on what happens if something came into being on Shabbos. So does that itself create problems? But here we're talking about that it was a malacha that brought it into being. So what the Shaul HaMeshuv understands is, okay, this Gemara shows you that your instinct would have been that if a malacha happens on Shabbos, it should create something prohibited. Therefore, that shows you that malacha itself is bad. And he says that's a slam dunk against those who say that it's all about your being at rest. Because if that was all it was about, there'd be no reason to prohibit Maaseh Shabbos. So then he goes on to add, he says you still have to explain why it is that it's mutter min haTorah to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you. Why should that be permitted? So to that he explains, says, I got a different answer for that. That's because of malachas machshavas. We know that there's a clause, this condition. In order to be chayev for a malacha, it's got to be malachas machshavas. So here, it's a problem, in a good sense, you're off the hook, so to speak, because the malachas and the machshavas is split up. The one who is actually doing the malacha, he's got the malachas, and the one who commanded it, he's got the machshavas. It's in two different people, so it fails to be malachas machshavas.
Is he assuming that malachas machshavas is min haTorah?
Well, we all assume that. The question is, what does it mean, min haTorah? That's the question. So that's how he understands that. Now, there's an additional issue you could ask here, that there is a taz. You know, I try to train myself to less frequently call sources famous, not famous, because it seems a little offensive sometimes. But here, in the case of this Taz, so Rav David Cohen wrote a whole sefer about it called HaTaz HaYadua, the famous Taz. So just at least for this source, you have to refer to it as the famous Taz. But there is a Taz, it's more than one Taz actually, Taz appears in at least three places in Shulchan Aruch, where in three different starim in Shulchan Aruch, three different chalakim in Shulchan Aruch, rather, that each time he says the Yisod, that even though we know that Chazal are adding things that are not in the Torah itself, by its very nature, and Chazal are prohibiting things the Torah doesn't prohibit, and commanding things the Torah doesn't command, so that by itself is not a kasha. So the fact that we have things we're not allowed to do, but they're not in the Torah, we understand the rabbinic law does that. But, says the Taz, there's a limit. They cannot aser a davar hamafurish b'kra. If there's something that the Torah explicitly permits, so then the rabbis can't ask for that. Why not is a good question. Rav Schachtler often explains that if Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh are supposed to blend into one unit, so then it can't be internally contradictory. It can't be the Torah is telling you you have to do something, or specifically you're allowed to do something, and the rabbis are telling you that you're not allowed to. They can't contradict. If the Torah is silent on something and the rabbis say don't do it, so that's not a contradiction. They can blend together. If the Torah explicitly says you can do something and the rabbis say you can't, so then that becomes a contradiction. Or maybe you could say along the lines of what we said a few minutes ago, that if we understand that Dinim Darabanan are often because the rabbis perceived something between the lines of the Torah, but if the Torah itself contradicts it, so then it doesn't seem to be that that's a viable interpretation of what the Torah is getting at. That's the Ratzon HaTorah if the Torah itself is saying not that way. So here, some ask the question, how could we have Daf Tesvav and Daf Kuf Tesvav in the same Torah, let alone in the same Masechta? That how could it be that we're told as a drasha, essentially making it a Din Min HaTorah, that Maisa Shabbos is Mutter, as a Din D'Rabbanan, essentially making it Aser? Isn't that a violation of the Taz's principle? For Amir al-Akam, we didn't really have this question because we don't have anything in the Torah that sounds like explicitly that you're allowed to tell an Akam to do malacha for you. It just didn't prohibit it. So the rabbis can come along and prohibit that, and there's not going to have any Taz issues. But here it sounds like you have a Taz issue, right? So one Gemara says a drasha telling you it's mutter, another Gemara 100 blad away telling you that midrabanan it's aser. So how could that be? You hear the question? So this was discussed in the tshuvas of the Dvar Yeshua, which I mentioned before. Dvar Yeshua, again, was a dayan in Tel Aviv. He lived about 50 years ago, maybe more, 50, 60 years ago. And he has a tshuva addressing this. And he suggests that it's not so much that it was a one-to-one correlation. The Torah says this is mutter, and the rabbis came and said, no, don't do it. That would be a problem. But that maybe in terms of the question of how to relate to the Isser Malacha on Shabbos, is it about you or is it about the broader environment? So maybe it's both. Then maybe Min HaTorah it's about you. The Isser Min HaTorah on Shabbos is that you should not do Malacha. But the Isser D'Rabbanan is that it's not even a specific Isser D'Rabbanan as much as Chazal added a layer to Shmira Shabbos. So they said that even though Min HaTorah it's about you being at rest, Midrabanan it's about creating an environment of rest. So therefore, a concept like an Isser Maisa Shabbos, that flows directly from that. not a specific enactment which correlates and opposes a heter. It's a consequence of adding on an extra layer to Shabbos, and that's his understanding, that that would not be affected by the Taz's rule. Hi.
At least sounds a little bit similar to what we, how we at least formulated the Chasam Sofer on Wednesday, that we can understand the Dimina Torah to be Iker and Rabban are coming to add a Gether, to add a, I mean, this seems, it's like together, together.
Right, so now you could ask the question of, is a Gether any different than any other kind of Issa Rabbanon? But what he's focusing on here is not that approach per se. He's saying that it's not that the legislation was specifically addressed to putting forth one point, which is a contradiction to the Torah. It's that they added on another layer, and that layer has different components to it. So as far as the nature of the Torah prohibition, indeed, it would not have included Maaseh Shabbos. So this is kind of the opposite of the Sholomeshiv, because he's saying that the nature of the Isra Malach on Shabbos, by its very nature, would not have led to prohibit Maaseh Shabbos. But because Chazal added on another layer to what Shmira Shabbos means, that extra layer, that has this component that would make sense, it would naturally flow from that, that Maaseh Shabbos should be prohibited. Okay, so far so good. So, the truth is, it's interesting, if you had a chance to look at the Rambam, so, his language is worth paying attention to, as it always is, but here in particular, so I don't think there's a Rambam Zmanim in here, so I'm going to get it off over here. The Rambam was in Parag Vav, Halacha Chaf Gimel, of Hilchas Shabbos. And the Rambam's language is very interesting. It says as follows, Yisrael sha'asa malacha b'Shabbos, a Jew who did malacha on Shabbos, im avar v'asa b'zadon, if he did it intentionally, asa lo lehanos b'osa malacha li'olam. He is not allowed to benefit from this malacha ever. V'shar Yisrael and other Jews, mutter lehem lehanos ba'al l'motzoi Shabbos mi'ad, they can benefit from it right away after Shabbos. Now, parenthetically, we talk about this miyad, which we saw these possibilities in our Gemara over here in Tezvav. We know that the din for Amir la'akum is different. Right? The din for Amir la'akum is that we shouldn't benefit on Shabbos from their malacha, and after Shabbos also, b'chidei shiyasu, that you have to wait the amount of time that it takes for the malacha could have been, that it could have been done after Shabbos. So here, strictly speaking, we find we don't yet have that distinction. We may have it invoked in other contexts, but so far there's a distinction between Jewish work and non-Jewish work, and we can talk about later why that is.
Is that a Jew doing the work for another Jew, or is he doing it for himself, and then another Jew can just happen to get benefit from it?
So that's also going to be an important detail. Listen to the rest of his language. So it's other Jews can benefit from this malacha right away after Shabbos. Shana Amar Ushmartem Esa Shabbos Ki Kodesh Hi. Hi Kodesh V'ein Maaseh Kodesh. Right, it's a fascinating formulation. Why is that so interesting? Because his formulation here is not that, oh, there was a pasuk and the rabbis came and said something else, that he sees it all as flowing from the pasuk, essentially. That he sees the drasha that permits as consistent with the final version, which involves the Issa D'Rabbanan. And just to read the rest of his words, he quoted from Isaiah, Kodesh Ketzad Yisrael Shebishol B'Shabbos B'Meziv, L'motzoi Shabbos Ye'achel Ye'acherim, Aval Lo, Lo Ye'achel Olamis, the him that cannot be eaten ever. V'im bishel bishkaga l'mosei Shabbos yoichol bein hu bein acherim miyad v'chein kol ki yaitzev v'zeh. So how does the Rambam understand the nature of the drasha and the pasuk? What's going on here? So it sounds like in the Rambam that the drasha has not been contradicted by the Din D'Rabbanan. It's consistent with the Din D'Rabbanan. But the fact that the Din Drabanan is not absolute is because of this drasha. In other words, sounds like what the Rambam is saying here is that there is any leeway here. The reason there's any space that other people can eat it, or other people can eat it after a certain point, or if it's Bishoge, he himself can eat it after a certain point. That is all because of the drasha. That's all because that din continues to pertain. And what about the fact that it's somewhat usur? So how does that coexist with the drasha? So perhaps what the Rambam would tell you is that that's because, okay, that's a knas. So a knas is separate from this. That it's not inherently treif. It's not inherently off limits. And that's why there are all these exceptions. And that's all a consequence of the drasha. But midrabanan, we have to figure out what is going to discourage chil Shabbos. And that's a part of the knas process. Make sense? So far, so good. So that is interesting. There is a year or two ago, this sefer was published, Igros Melachim, the Shailos and Shuvas of Rav Yaakov Kantrowitz. And here he has a discussion where he talks about, and this is an issue other poskim took up in different contexts. He says, first of all, even if we want to say that there's a distinction between the one doing the malacha and those who are not the ones doing the malacha, but what if the malacha was done on behalf of another person? So maybe we should include that in the first category, include that as the person who is the one doing the malacha, which is a concept which is really borrowed from another area of halacha in Yerideya, where you have a concept of bittul, and there we have a halacha, you shouldn't be mevatel something l'chaychila. And there we distinguish between the one doing the mevatlin and the others, who were not the ones doing it. And there's a distinction also thrown in that the ones who the bittul was done on their behalf, that should be considered like the ones who did the bittul themselves. So when it comes to Maisa Shabbos, so there are those who argue, and that's the thing we seem to assume, that if Malacha is being done not just by someone else, but by someone else on behalf of you, so then you're treated like the one doing it. So if that's the case, so what if you have a company or a business that is making products on Shabbos because there is a market for it, because there are Jews who are going to use it. So maybe they should be treated like the ones who actually did it. Lo b'shvilo. And maybe the Isser Olamis, this idea of a permanent Isser, maybe that should be relevant to them also. So here it's interesting how exactly to understand how this lines up. There's Ksav Sofer who has a similar approach, and others didn't fully accept it. But here in this tshuva of Kantrowitz, so he essentially is combining issues of policy and also interpreting the din on a basic level. So he was addressing a situation where you have a bakery that's operated by Jews, and they're baking on Shabbos, and they're baking for other Jews who are going to eat it, and because they are interested in their products, so they're going to make more. They have a bigger market. So maybe we should say that it's prohibited forever for the customers too. So addressing that from both directions is a matter of policy, so he certainly was concerned about that. So there's a whole back and forth here that others were asking him to sign on to a ban, and he said, yeah, I very much see the need for that. So you see it being presented kind of as a policy consideration. But there is also, he understands more to it. He thinks that maybe it's actually an Isser Daraisa. And that he understands that we should look at it differently when it's not something that just happened on Shabbos, but something that is happening all the time. And if something is happening b'kvias, going on regularly, so then that creates a whole different story. And for that, he goes back to the drasha, and he says that when it says he kodesh ve'ed maaseh kodesh, so what we should understand from that, if I'm understanding him correctly, is that if it's just a discrete malacha, but Shabbos still exists as a concept by this person, so then that's what the pasuk is telling you, the results of that malacha are not prohibited. But if the person does malacha all the time, so essentially he has a negated Shabbos as far as this is concerned. So then by him, Shabbos isn't Kodesh anymore. And then included in that, then the Maisa Shabbos is also awesome. It's a chiddush of an approach. But he's basically understanding the drasha to say that it's only when this is a malacha in the abstract, but Shabbos as a whole maintains its Kedusha regarding this individual, so then there's no Isser to benefit from it. But when Shabbos has been wholesale abandoned, so then that's no longer the case. It's an interesting approach. And therefore, says the products of this bakery are Isser for the customers forever. So I wanted to discuss with you one more fascinating question, but we're out of time. I'll just tantalize you with a question today. So a certain contemporary posek, we'll fill this in tomorrow and still try to get to the next point, but a certain contemporary posek discusses a situation of a Baal Tshuva, a man in Israel who became religious later on, and in his previous stage, he had been a contractor and a house constructor, and he was building people's houses all the time. And on his day off, he'd work on his own house. So what was the one day off he had every week? It was Saturday. So after a few years, he had a house that was completely built only on Shabbos. Pretty crazy thing. So can he continue to live in such a house? We'll find out the answer, God willing, tomorrow. So we will discuss a little bit that issue, and then hopefully segue into that final sugya. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should stay warm. Stay dry.